Chapter 17. The man Austin knew only as Ivan gazed around in wonder at the shrine to the Romanovs. Austin had just given him a demonstration of the chanting chair. "This is really quite extraordinary," he said, letting his eyes wander around the room. "You have made quite a find." Austin responded with a lopsided grin. "Then all is forgiven for coming in with six guns blazing?" "On the contrary, it's exactly what I wanted to happen." "You're a strange man, Ivan," Austin said with a shake of his head. "That may be, but in this case, my actions were purely logical." He spread his forefinger and thumb apart. "Don't forget that I have a dossier this thick on you, as well as my personal experience with your methods. I knew warning you off would be the surest way to bring you here."
"Why be so Machiavellian?
Why not simply invite me to your party? I'm an agreeable guy." "You are not naive in these matters. If I had said back in Istanbul that I needed your help, what would you have replied, given the stormy history of our relationship?"
"I don't know," Austin said with a shrug.
"I do. You might have regarded it as a trap, an ingenious way of getting back at you for this souvenir of past encounters." He touched the scar on his cheek. "The Russians are famous for their chess skills, and you must admit revenge can be a potent motivator."
"I've learned to control my passions and exploit those of others to defeat them."
"There's another reason I held back. I suspect that if I had asked for your help, you would have gone to your higher ups. Your government would have discouraged this mission."
"What makes you so sure of that?"
"Some of your countrymen are supporting the dark forces gathering in Russia." Austin raised an eyebrow.
"Anyone I know?"
"Probably, but I doubt if you'd believe me, so I'll keep my thoughts to myself for now."
"How can you be sure that I didn't act with official permission?"
"I consider it highly unlikely that your government would tolerate a clandestine invasion of a foreign country."
"Last time I looked, Numa was part of the government."
"You're not the only one I have kept tabs on, Mr. Austin. I have files on everyone of any consequence in Numa, from your partner, Joe Zavala, right up to Admiral Sandecker. We both know that the good Admiral would never allow a rogue operation."
The Russian smiled.
"Unless it was under his control, of course."
"Sounds as if you've done your homework," Austin admitted.
"Knowing the inner workings of Numa was vital in order to make your agency a part of the equation."
"I don't understand. Why involve Numa?"
"The intelligence services in both our countries have been infiltrated by the enemy. Those fighting men you saw today have all served with me for years, but even a tightly knit force can be compromised by a single person. Numa's integrity is above reproach. On the more practical side, I need Numa's global capacity for communications and transport, your incredible intelligence and research facilities."
"Thanks for the endorsement, but I don't know if I can help. I'm only one person out of thousands at the agency."
"Please don't be disingenuous, Mr. Austin. You could never have undertaken this mission if it were not for the tacit approval of Admiral Sandecker and Rudy Gunn."
Austin was impressed with Ivan's knowledge of how things worked at Numa.
"Even if I admitted you were right on this score, I still don't have the power to give you everything you want."
"When the threat to your country becomes apparent, you'll feel different. We need each other."
"That's another problem. You still haven't told me what this threat is."
"Only because I don't know."
"Yet you're still convinced it's real?"
"Oh, yes, Mr. Austin.
Knowing the players in this drama, I'd say it's very real." Austin still didn't know how much to believe Ivan, but there was no mistaking the Russian's seriousness.
Maybe one of the Cossacks could tell us something. Petrov's lips tightened in a smile. We both should have thought about that earlier. Their leader was the big man with the red beard. Dead men tell no tales, unfortunately. Sorry, but it couldn't be helped under the circumstances. I'm curious. How long were you and your boys hiding in the woods? Since dawn. We landed a few miles up the coast and made our way overland at night. I saw the fishing boat arrive and suspected you were on it. We didn't know you had landed and were quite surprised to see you pop up out of nowhere. Congratulations on a successful infiltration. Austin ignored the compliment. Then you saw that the submarine crew was in trouble. We observed the men being rounded up and marched to the field. To answer your unspoken question, yes, we would have intervened. My men were readying for the attack. Then you and your friend arrived, and our intervention hardly seemed necessary. From the damage you inflicted, I thought a platoon of U.S. Marines had landed. It's doubtful how much the Cossacks could have told us. They are nothing more than bandit scum whose sole function was to guard this complex. Petrov walked over to the altar and touched the photograph above it. The last of the Tsars, he said. That's quite a headpiece, Austin said, pointing to the jeweled crown in the picture. Whoever wears the crown of Ivan the Terrible will rule Russia, Petrov said. Seeing Austin's perplexed expression, he smiled. An old Russian proverb. Don't look for hidden auguries in the words. They mean what they say. Whoever is strong enough to keep all that weight on his head and brutish and terrible enough to possess the crown will find those same qualities of use in ruling this land. Where's the crown now? It disappeared with a great deal of the Tsar's other treasure that was missing after the revolution. When the white government came into Yekaterinburg, where the Tsar was probably murdered, they found a list of items belonging to the imperial family. Some items were recovered, but it is generally conceded that the list represented only a portion of the items the family had with them in exile. The most valuable items, the crown included, have never been found. Was there a list of the missing treasure? The Soviets made such a list, but it has never turned up. It's assumed that the KGB had the list before the overthrow of communism. I've made inquiries that lead me to believe the list is still in existence, but its whereabouts is a mystery. How did you know about the crown without the list? I've seen this and other photos of it. It's made in two parts, representing the East and West empires. The double-headed eagle was the crest of the Romanovs. The orb the eagle surmounts is a symbol of earthly power. It must be worth a fortune. The crown's value can't be measured in dollars or rubles. This crown and the other treasure came from the sweat and toil of the Russian serfs who saw the Tsar as godlike. The Tsar was the richest man in the world. He had revenue from the crown lands, 1,000,000 square miles, including gold and silver mines, and owned incredible riches. Our sovereigns had an almost barbaric taste for the glitter of gold and gems. Tsar was Russian for Caesar. Emirs and shahs laid gifts of incredible value at his feet. The family in the photo doesn't look as if it's enjoying all that wealth. They knew the crown was more of a curse than a blessing. It was reserved for the frail head of the young boy Alexander, although it's doubtful he would have lived long enough to take his father's place. He had hemophilia. Uncontrollable bleeding, you know? The real problem among European royalty, all those intermarriages. Anyway, other relatives would have stepped in to claim the throne. Any idea who built this shrine? I thought it might be Ratzov at first. I could see him, sitting here, imagining that he will someday become the ruler of Russia. But the decadent trappings of the apartment in the main complex puzzle me. Ratzov is almost ascetic in his convictions. The monk, on the other hand, is said to be debauched. It's odd how much he resembles Rasputin in his depraved lifestyle. My guess is that Boris spent more time here than Ratzov. Ratzov would like to bring back the past. In his madness, Boris lives it. That's quite a role reversal. Perhaps, but one thing is certain. They both must be stopped, Petrov said, his eyes boring into Austin's. And you must help me. Austin was still skeptical. I'll think about it, Ivan. Right now, I need some fresh air. Petrov gripped Austin by the arm. Maybe your own countrymen can persuade you. You remember the words of the great American patriot philosopher Thomas Paine? He said he was not defending a few acres of ground, but the cause. Austin knew the dossier Petrov had on him would have mentioned the volumes of philosophy that lined his bookshelves. What is your cause, Ivan? Perhaps it's the same as yours. Don't take this the wrong way, but I can't see you waving the flag for motherhood, apple pie, and the American way. I did my share of waving the hammer and sickle as a young pioneer marching in the May Day parades. There are deeper issues here. Don't let our past get in the way. Judge me by the present, so that both our countries will have a future. Austin saw a slight softening in Petrov's rock-hard eyes. Maybe the man was human after all. Guess we're stuck with each other. Whether we like it or not, then you'll work with me. I can't speak for Numa, but I'll do what I can, Austin said, extending his hand. Come on, partner, I've got something else that will interest you. He led the way down through the labyrinth to the submarine pen. Petrov recognized the sub immediately. It's an India class, he said. It was designed to carry submersibles for use by special operations forces. Any idea how it got here? There's a booming market in the world for Soviet armaments. This isn't exactly a box of AK-47s. My country has always done things on a grand scale. For the right price, you could probably buy a battleship. As you know, the Soviet Union launched dozens of huge subs during the Cold War. Many have been mothballed or otherwise decommissioned. But given the sad state of our armed forces, anything is possible. This could be an important lead. I can't imagine anyone making a purchase this big without somebody knowing about it. I'll run a discreet check. Tell me about these men from your NR-1 submarine. What did they have to say? I talked to one of them. The sub was hijacked by someone posing as a scientist, transported on the back of that submarine and made to work salvaging cargo from an old freighter. The fact that they're still holding the captain and pilot indicates that they have more work planned for the NR-1. Austin rapped the stone floor with his heel. Maybe you can look into the ownership of this place. I already have. The property is still owned by the Russian government. About 2 years ago, it was leased to a private corporation. They said they wanted to establish a fish processing plant here. From what I've seen, the leaseholder was more interested in what was under the ground than on top of it. Any leads on the corporation? Yes. We got a break there. It was a straw for Ataman. Austin nodded. Why does that not surprise me? I should get back above. Joe will wonder what happened to us. They followed the network of corridors and stairs that took them back to the surface. It was a relief to break out into the sunshine and fresh air. To Austin's surprise, the soccer field was clear of carnage. Petrov sensed the question on Austin's lips. Before we went below, I ordered my men to drag the dead into the woods and bury them. That was considerate of you. There was nothing considerate about it. I wanted nothing left that could be seen from the air. They walked across the field toward the downed helicopter. I've taken care of the dead, he said, glancing toward the helicopter. I will leave it up to you to deal with the living. It was a wonder that the chopper had been able to land as softly as it had. The Cossacks had shot high, and the upper cockpit and engine housing were riddled with bullet holes. Kayella sat on the ground nearby with her legs crossed, writing in a shorthand notebook. Austin put on his most winning smile. Kayella felt his shadow and looked up. Small world, he said, with his best show of teeth enamel. Kayella skewered Austin with a hard stare. Undaunted, Austin plunked onto the ground beside her. Nice of you to go to all this trouble just so we'd have the opportunity to reschedule our dinner date. You're the one who didn't show up back there in Istanbul. True. Which is why I'm glad I have the chance to apologize and see if I can make it up to you over cocktails. She raised an eyebrow. Apologize for standing me up? Or for stealing Captain Kemal? Kayella was no pushover for the Austin charm offensive. This was going to be more complicated than he thought. Okay. Let's deal with this in tiny steps. First, I apologize for missing the dinner date. I was unexpectedly tied up and couldn't make it. As to Captain Kemal, you'll have to admit you made a mistake by not holding him with some sort of retainer while you went off to Paris. Please, spare me the lecture. I never thought you would steal him after you warned me to stay away from this place because it was too dangerous and an infringement of Russian territory. You'll have to admit I was right about the danger, he said, glancing at the wreckage of the helicopter. Kayla took a deep breath and slowly let it out. I'll grant you the obvious. But I'll bet nobody gave you or your Numa friend an invitation to drop by for tea. That's correct, but it doesn't make it right. You sound like my mother, she said with mock disgust. Your apology for missing dinner is accepted. Luckily, my producer has bankrolled enough money to lease a helicopter, so I wouldn't have hired Captain Kemal anyhow. You still owe me, though. Austin noticed the twinkle in the amber eyes and realized she had been setting him up, using his guilt as leverage. You're playing me like a fish, aren't you? Kayla threw her head backward and laughed. I'm certainly trying to. You deserve to be jerked around after trying to put me off with that phony shark smile and the small world routine. Real smooth character. Next thing you'd be asking me what my astrological sign was. Well, it's Capricorn, in case you're interested. I didn't mean to make it sound like a singles bar. My sign is Pisces, by the way. Pisces. That's fitting for a Numa guy. She put her notebook aside. I'd advise you to stay out of singles bars. With that corny line, you'd go home alone every night. Austin decided he really liked this woman. She was tough and feminine at the same time, had a sharp sense of humor and plenty of intelligence, and the qualities he admired were gift-wrapped in a lovely package. Okay, now that I've snapped up the hook, I'll let you reel me in, but only to a point. What does your devious little soul want from me? The truth, for starters. Why are you here? For instance, and who are the tough guys in the black suits? And why are the people around here so damned unfriendly? Is this for a story? Maybe. But I want to know mostly because I want to know. Curiosity is the best tool of a good reporter. Austin was no fan of mendacity, but he didn't want to involve Kayla and her gang in something that could bite them. They had been lucky twice so far. Their third encounter with the bad guys could be a strikeout. You're not the only one who's curious. After my first run-in with those guys on horses, I wanted to know more. I also felt I had to do something for Kamal's cousin, Mehmet. Is there a submarine base here? Yes. Quite extensive, as a matter of fact. I knew it. I want to get inside. Okay by me, but you may have problems with that gentleman over there. Ivan was making his way across the field from the woods where he had been inspecting his men's work. Who is he? His name is Ivan. He's the boss man. Military? Why don't you ask him yourself? Kayla grabbed her notebook and sprang to her feet. I think I will. She strode toward the Russian and intercepted him. Austin watched with interest as she used her body language to send a tantalizing message. She was wading in with a full feminine court press, standing first on one leg, then the other, hip out, touching Ivan lightly on the chest, flashing him her incredible smile. Ivan stood there with his arms crossed like a granite statue, resisting the full assault. When she was done, he spoke a few words. Kayla's shoulders suddenly squared. She leaned forward and stuck her jaw into his face. Then she wheeled and strode purposefully back to Austin. What a stubborn little man, she fumed. He said that the sub-base is the property of the Russian government and is off-limits to the public. He suggests that I make arrangements with you to leave here as quickly as possible or suffer the consequences. She grinned. Well, we can still run the story. I've got film. She marched over to the helicopter wreckage with a determined step and talked with Lombardo and Dundee, who had been poking around in the wreckage. Their conversation was animated and grew more so when he showed her the jumble of metal and plastic that was what was left of the video camera. Kayla slowly walked back to Austin. It looks as if we'll have to bum a ride with you, she said, without enthusiasm. Austin saw Joe Zavala making his way toward them from the direction of the beach where he'd been checking visually and on the radio to see if the NR1 crew had made it to the fishing boat. He excused himself and took Zavala aside. Zavala said, they all made it to Kamal's boat. Good news, but we've got a problem. Kayla and her guys need a ride, and I don't want them anywhere near the NR1 crew. Zavala cast an admiring glance toward the TV reporter. Then you'll be happy to know the Argo is keeping an eye on us and monitoring radio transmissions. I just talked to Captain Atwood. They've sent a boat in to transfer the Navy to the survey ship. Kamal's boat is free and clear. Austin let out a nasty chuckle. Would you send a message to the Argo and ask them to pick us up, too? Then call Captain Kamal, tell him that we will be transferring to the Argo, and ask if he wouldn't mind taking on a few passengers in our place. Aye, aye, sir, Zavala said with a snappy salute. While Joe was calling the fishing boat, Austin went over to tell Kayla and her friends that first-class transportation had been arranged.